Welcome to another episode of Purple Insider. Matthew Collar here, along with Kyle Madsen, who is a producer for 95.7 The Game in San Francisco. Also hosts the Candlestick Chronicles podcast. We are Blue Wire brothers. We are on the Blue Wire podcast network. So it is great to have you, Kyle. What's going on, man?
Not a lot. Trying to stay out of the heat as much as possible. I live about an hour east of San Francisco, and we're in the 105 range over these next few days. So staying inside a lot.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Well, we kind of had that a little bit earlier in the summer. People don't understand that for about 4 to 6 weeks, it is absolutely insanely hot, intolerably hot in Minnesota. Everyone thinks it's just cold all the
time.
That's
a stunner for me. I learned that right now.
The Midwest. It's the Midwest. Like, Minneapolis is not Canada. It's Midwest. So it's like not that far away from Chicago. It's the same kind of deal. It's not, I mean, it's a little different than like St. Louis, but you still get that crazy humidity, insane heat. It just doesn't last that long. So your 49ers who are here are probably thrilled because it was like 78 when they practiced today. So it's a very nice situation. We're going to talk a little bit about that, about the joint practices, but mostly leading up to this preseason game, I have some kind of things and hypotheticals that I want to run by you, which starts with actually the quarterback situation. So I got a look at Trey Lance today, and no surprise, the man is very physically gifted. I don't know that he is a finished product or anywhere close to that. I don't think that anybody is saying that with the 49ers, but I couldn't help but think about how much Kyle Shanahan wanted Kirk Cousins. And so it's like Jimmy Garoppolo didn't make the trip because think how awkward that would be. Like the other quarterbacks out there, your coach loves that guy and your coach loves that guy, but he doesn't love you despite the fact that they went to the Super Bowl and the NFC Championship. Like what a strange situation for Jimmy Garoppolo to be in, even though he was not in Minnesota, but kind of odd that like Kirk Cousins and Trey Lance couldn't be much different from each other. One is small by quarterback standards and cannot run fast at all. And the other one is a physical freak. It's remarkable to think about.
Yeah, I think the misnomer with Cousins and Shanahan talked about this in the lead up to the draft because there were all the Mac Jones rumors, right? And whether they were substantiated or not, I don't know if we'll ever know, but there were the Mac Jones rumors and somebody referred to Kirk Cousins as Kyle Shanahan's ideal quarterback. And he kind of pushed back on that and was like, that's not my archetype quarterback. I just think Kirk Cousins is a player that you can win with. The same way Jimmy Garoppolo is a player that you can win with. And the difference is Trey Lance, they're hoping, again, I agree with you, maybe not right now and maybe not even next year, but down the road, he's a quarterback that like you will win with. He is going to be in that Josh Allen. This is their hope, that he's in that Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady category where it's like, man, that team has that quarterback. They're going to the playoffs. And I don't think Jimmy is necessarily that. I don't think Kirk Cousins is necessarily that. But in 2018, when it looked like that, because in 2017, the 49ers had Brian Hoyer, and then they drafted C.J. Beathard. So their plan was to get through 2017, and then he was going to get Kirk Cousins in 2018 and build a roster around Kirk Cousins. So, which, I mean, when you see, I'm a little bit of the mind that Kirk Cousins is better than Jimmy Garoppolo. There's a lot of people who are 49er fans that'll push back on that. But I think he's better, and I think the 49ers might actually have gotten over the hump had they had Cousins with this team, but that's a different conversation. Then Jimmy Garoppolo became available for them late in 2017, and not only did they acquire him for a second-round pick, but he goes 5-0 in his five starts and looked really good doing it. And so it became, okay, there's the quarterback that they can win with. Now, I don't think it was ever like Kirk Cousins or bust or like they begrudgingly made – Jimmy Garoppolo, the highest paid quarterback in the league or highest paid quarterback ever to that point. So I think a lot of the Cousins stuff gets a little bit overblown with Kyle Shanahan, but that was definitely a thing. Like they passed up Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes in 2017 and Mitchell Trubisky, if you want to go that far, because the plan was Kirk Cousins that offseason.
It's really interesting, though, because with Cousins, the Shanahan family like loves him specifically because they drafted him, right? I mean, so in Washington, and it took a lot of heat for it. Like, why are you drafting this guy when you just drafted RG3? Yeah. What are you doing? And then he had to kind of fight to overcome that in Washington, and never exactly did, because he didn't get them deep in the playoffs. They didn't win a whole lot. And also, it seemed like still Daniel Snyder wanted RG3 to work out. When it didn't, he wasn't going to stick with Kirk Cousins. It is funny, though, because I think if you ask like 100 Vikings fans who's better, Garoppolo or Cousins, they'll say, well, Garoppolo's won a lot more, so probably him. And if you ask 49ers fans, they'll say, well, Cousins is more accurate and has better numbers, so it's probably him. And both fan bases have their reasons. I would probably lean toward Jimmy G a little bit myself, but the health issue is very serious. Like, like Garoppolo, I think, does some things that Cousins doesn't. And one of them is like have some leadership capabilities, maybe a little more gutsiness to his game. But then if you have a guy that, you know, misses whatever, like two seasons basically in a row, and then plays last year almost completely hurt, and then has a cap hit of $27 million for this year, like that doesn't add up very well, even if you like him. And with Cousins, like there's the physical limitations that exist, does not have the biggest arm, doesn't have the speed or anything like that. But I could see where a Kyle Shanahan would be like, if I just push those right buttons. And I think Kyle Shanahan has every reason to believe in himself when it comes to this, based on his past history. Like, he's one of these guys, there are very few of them, but he's one of these guys who just elevates everybody around him. The only problem with the whole theory, though, is that Cousins has also had a lot of those guys in his career. Sean McVay, Kevin Stefanski, Gary Kubiak. So I do think about a lot as San Francisco is here, like this could have been Kirk coming to town to have this practice.
Yeah, and I would be fascinated to know the timeline or what it looks like if the Niners had signed Cousins in 18 instead of Garoppolo, because I think their record's probably better. I mean, you talked about the durability has been better. They're probably not drafting high enough in the draft to pick a quarterback. So it would be really interesting to see how that goes. I was on board with Cousins being better than Garoppolo. I was just like, that's just a thing. If you replace Garoppolo with Cousins, the Niners are going to be better. But then I watched Cousins at Levi Stadium last year, and the Niners defense is good. Like, don't get me wrong, but there were just three or four plays in that game, and I'm up in the press box, so you get the all 22 view, and there were three or four plays in that game where you had receivers like giving up on routes before the throw got there, because it like there's one where Justin Jefferson's wide open and he's standing there, he's got his hands up, and then he drops his hands and he slumps his shoulders as the throw like skips into him in the end zone. And it's just they're I'm a numbers guy. I like being able to like have empirical data to prove things and not just like vibes. But just the vibe with Kirk Cousins is so much different than it is with Garoppolo, where Garoppolo can make five of those throws and his teammates are like, hey, he's going to get the next one. And oftentimes he did. And that's why they'd wind up winning these games. They had no business winning with him at quarterback. So it's a fascinating, like, sliding doors moment in NFL history, that Garoppolo trade and then what ended up happening with Cousins. Why did the Vikings, I'm going to ask you a question, because this was baffling to out here, because the Niners were like, hey, they hit a ceiling with Garoppolo. Bring in Trey Lance, go the opposite direction, like big, fast, big arm, little inaccurate. We'll figure it out. Meanwhile, the Vikings are paying Kirk Cousins more money to continue being their quarterback. Why? Yeah,
well,
why?
So here's something I ran across, though. So I wrote a little column about, like, remember those Kirk to San Francisco rumors? But I wasn't referring to 2018. There were rumors in 2020 that San Francisco would be interested in chasing Cousins if the Vikings didn't extend him. And because he won the playoff game in New Orleans, they decided to extend him and try to run it back. But the problem is the roster fell apart. And I mean, as it does, like, you run into this no matter who you are. Like, even even eventually the Bill Walsh dynasty comes apart when the players get old, right? Mm-hmm. This is one of Bill Belichick's long hacks. Is anybody who started to look old, you just threw him in the dumpster and got somebody else. The Vikings did not do that. They signed all of their older players to big extensions. They kind of had a super top heavy roster. And when a lot of those players left, they had no replacements. They didn't hit on draft picks. They didn't develop players particularly well, or didn't find the randomness in that, like UDFAs who become great, or late round draft picks or whatever it might be. And yet they didn't want to kind of admit failure with Cousins. So they just said, like, well, let's just bring it back. Let's try to patchwork this defense together and make it work. And then when it didn't for the last 2 years, then it was, well, you know, Mike Zimmer created some pretty bad vibes around here. And the veteran players were like, yeah, it was the vibes, not me. And then, so they said again, but also another part of this too, is that they didn't have a Trey Lance to draft. If there was a Trey Lance to draft in this draft, I can almost guarantee you that the Vikings would have someone else at quarterback and not Kirk Cousins. But like the rest of the league, and even Kenny Pickett's pretty questionable as a first round pick. Yeah. Like, what is that going to be, like a Paxton Lynch thing? I don't know. I mean, maybe not, but it's just not an impressive. It's not a Trey Lance. It's not somebody that you're talking about. Like, best case scenario, Kenny Pickett is Jimmy Garoppolo. Absolute best case.
Sure.
So instead of taking best case scenario Jimmy Garoppolo, they were just like, this is our only option. We might as well try to win. So that's kind of how it ends up happening, is they were always trying to justify signing him. So even though all of the things were in the cards to not extend him the first time in 2020, they did anyway, because they didn't want to throw up the white flag on that. And the GM was already on the hot seat. So you can't be like, oh yeah, that huge quarterback signing we made, whoops, didn't work out. Hate to see it, especially after a playoff win, to then be like, oh no, that was the peak, folks. But if you were doing it with complete job security, I even wrote an article about it. If you were doing with complete job security, they would have moved on at that moment, just totally rebuilt. And they have refused over the years to rebuild. And thus, we still have Kirk Cousins as the quarterback.
How's Kellen Mond look?
We still have Kirk Cousins as the quarterback and no one else.
There was a contingent of, I don't want to say contingent, a faction. Faction's the word I'm looking
for. There's a faction. I know
this
what you're saying.
Faction of 49ers fan that was like, what if they traded up to 3 to draft Kyle Pitts and then they'll draft Kellen Mond in the second round? And I'm like, or they could not do that.
Yeah.
I was out on Kellen Mond from the jump. I didn't think he was very good.
Well, and part of that was that there were like draft Twitter people who were pushing the Kellen Mond thing.
It's kind of wild.
It was like, I don't really get it. And neither did the league. Like, I just don't really see it. Yeah. I mean, when a guy has like 4 years starting and never shows any high end, like, well, this is kind of it. But the thing that's funny about this is when they drafted Kellen Mond, Rick Spielman compared him to Teddy Bridgewater, who's everyone's favorite son here and was Mike Zimmer's like favorite player of all time and everything else. And so it was like, let's see. They're saying he's more mobile. Kirk isn't. More physically gifted. He's kind of got leadership like Teddy Bridgewater. Is like, wink, wink. Are you guys taking shots at Kirk or what? So it's always been this very weird relationship, because they've continued to go back to Kirk, but also like consistently showed that they weren't signed into him for long-term, a one-year extension this time, and have never really like fully supported him. The coach absolutely didn't. It's one of the reasons he's not here. And they never gave him anything longer than a couple of years. So it has been the downright kind of bizarre. And then even then, like, they signed no one this year on offense. They decided not to draft Jameson Williams. It was like, they never went out and even got that extra player in free agency. It was like always rebuilding the defense. The whole thing is kind of odd.
It's fascinating.
It really is.
Kirk Cousins' career, just like earnings, like his contracts are incredible.
Oh, I mean, his agent, I've called him God.
Ski-mask Hall of Famer, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, he's God agent on the show. So here's a question, though. Because I think what people want from Kevin O'Connell is to be like, you know, like Shanahan was to Jimmy. Mm-hmm. So you're the offensive genius. You come from McVay. Dial stuff up and go to the Super Bowl or something. Mm-hmm. What is it about Shanahan, as someone who watches him all the time, the whole career there in San Francisco? Like, what is it about him that allows those offenses to be as effective as they are that possibly O'Connell can take away and use on Kirk?
The biggest thing that Kyle Shanahan does, well, A, you have to have good players, and I think the Vikings do. In fact, I don't think it's a stretch to say that the Vikings 3 of Jefferson, Thielen, and Cook, and if you want to throw Madison in there, you can, is better than Ayuk, Samuel, and Mitchell if you're just doing two wide receivers and running back. I don't think that's that crazy of a stretch. So the thing that Kyle Shanahan does is everything is multiple. Like, he can run the same formation or the same personnel grouping. A lot of 21. It's a lot of two running backs, one tight end. But Kyle Juszczyk, the fullback, can play fullback. He can play inline tight end. He can split out wide. He can play from the slot. You have George Kittle, who can line up in line, who can line up in the slot. In an ideal world, the running back would be able to do the same. That's why they paid Jerick McKinnon all that money, and that didn't work out because of his knee injury. But that's the ideal. They can run 21 personnel and run six different formations out of it and run the same play out of those six different formations and then go back to it, but run something completely different. And it's matchup nightmares. It's locating a linebacker or two linebackers that can't move or can't cover, getting those guys in space against Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk and George Kittle and going to work. And that's where you get Jimmy Garoppolo being 29th in ADOT and first in yards per attempt. You know, like his depth of target is not great, but it's a talented player. Like, Deebo Samuel is just an immensely talented player, but he also gets a lot of room where he's just by himself. A lot of George Kittle routes where he's just by himself with all kinds of space. So that's the big thing is figuring out ways to manipulate defenses with personnel outside of just like play action. Like, play action is one thing, but you have to be able to go play action in a way that's going to give Justin Jefferson, and I know teams aren't just letting Justin Jefferson run wide open, but getting Justin Jefferson in advantageous spots where a linebacker's on him or a safety's on him. That's the big thing that Kyle Shanahan does, I think, better than anyone, is he gets those numbers advantages in the run game where it's six blocking five. And that's why I think Trey Lance can really work out, because it makes it easier to gain those advantages. And then, like I said, isolating a couple of players on defense and creating mismatches with them. And I think the Vikings have the personnel to do it. I don't know what I'm admittedly not up on the Vikings tight end depth chart, but that's the key cog is George Kittle and just his ability to A, run block like crazy and be one of the best run blocking tight ends in the league, while also being one of the most effective pass catching tight ends in the league. Like, he had a down year last year and had 910 yards and a career high and six touchdowns. So it has a lot to do with personnel, but I think utilizing that personnel is key. That's not what I was trying to say. Figuring out how to best utilize that personnel against whatever the defense is doing is what Kyle Shanahan's really good at, that I'm not sure other people are able to really replicate.
Yeah, and everyone always says the same stuff. Like, we're trying to make the run look like the pass, and we are, you know, trying to get playmakers in space. And, like, none of this stuff is new. I mean, like, Kevin O'Connell is coming in, and I don't blame him for this. He didn't listen to press conferences of Gary Kubiak or Clint Kubiak or Kevin Stefanski saying a lot of the same stuff. And, like, right. And I mean, Gary is like, that's that whole tree with Shanahan, and Shanahan worked for Gary back in the day. And so these guys, they're doing a lot of the same stuff. And what I always think that one of the coaches for the Vikings, Pat Shurmur, who's sort of the same, like, West Coast and that kind of thing. He used to say, like, it's the players and not the plays. And I think it's like some of the plays, but George Kittle and Deebo Samuel are absolutely special. And Irv Smith Jr. has just not been healthy enough to really prove that he can be. I think that there's potential there, but he's not George Kittle. He's not going to be able to block like him. He's not as powerful of a runner after the catch as him. I don't think he's as fast or as strong as him. Like, that's a big difference. But, you know, can you get Justin Jefferson in enough space to make big plays? Of course you can. The other coaches did too. The guy's had one of the best starts to his career, but where's the edge, I guess, is what I'm thinking about with this Vikings offense. It's like, where can you get the edge of what the guys did before you? And I'm not sure that we know the answer yet, but I think it is probably just being a little sharper when it comes to some of the things you're talking about.
One of the things, this is what I was trying to articulate earlier, and I couldn't figure out how to do it. Nick Wagner at ESPN, he covers the 49ers for ESPN, wrote a really, really good piece about Shanahan's upbringing as a coach and how he started on that John Gruden Buccaneers staff. And he would just go sit in defensive meeting rooms And his understanding of defensive rules and principles mm-hmm. and being able to manipulate those to get a linebacker where he knows that that linebacker is going to go to this spot and then fill that gap that the linebacker leaves. Like, it's just an understanding of football that I think requires like that upbringing. Like in 2004, he was there in defensive meeting rooms, just learning everything he could about defensive football before he was ever even an offensive position coach. He's quality control with Tampa Bay. So that's one of the big things I think that goes overlooked a little bit with Shanahan is just his ability to manipulate defenses based on what he knows the defense wants to do on a particular play or a particular action. And he takes advantage of that pretty regularly. One of the games that stands out to me, and it was my like huzzah moment with Kyle Shanahan, is week 7, I think, of the 2019 season. They played Carolina at Levi's Stadium. And Luke Kuechly looked like he'd never played football. He was spinning. And Luke Kuechly is an incredible linebacker, like defensive player of the year caliber linebacker. Just looked like he had no idea. And that was when it was like, oh, I get why this works now. And that's he's adaptable to his personnel, and he has a personnel now where it's power running game and then throwing off of that.
Yeah, that's so interesting because I had the same sort of feeling about, I mean, you know, you saw it with Atlanta, but Matt Ryan was also at that time a great quarterback still before mm-hmm. he totally fell off the side of a cliff, and I'm not convinced will be great again. But, you know, so you're like, okay, it's Shanahan, but he's also got this like borderline Hall of Fame quarterback. Okay, you know, he's taking him to another level, but still, like, that's that quarterback. 2018, the opener, Vikings and 49ers. The same thing you just described happened to Eric Kendricks. And I had the same thought where I was like, this never happens to Eric Kendricks. He is one mm-hmm. of the absolute best. But then Jimmy Garoppolo missed a wide open George Kittle in the end zone. It was like, well, that's why that's not going to work. But there is another part of this, though. And this is going to be the very interesting thing between O'Connell and Cousins, is that Jimmy would throw it like, Jimmy, even with the first read, he would just be like, I don't know, the guy didn't get open, but screw it, I'm gonna throw it to him anyway. And it would actually work out kind of a lot, sometimes not, but Cousins is not like that. And what we've seen already in camp, the only issue the offense is having is where Cousins has thrown a lot of picks, because I think he's having trouble adapting to like Kevin O'Connell wanting him to throw it anyway. Like, even if it's not quite there, he wants to kind of go to the check down or go to whatever. And O'Connell's like, no, you got to be Matt Stafford. You got to gun it in there. You got to be Jimmy G. Like, isn't Matt Stafford just like a more gifted Jimmy G? Like, you got to be that. But that's not Kirk, though. But that's like, it's like the wrong comparison. Like, Jimmy G and Kirk are middling quarterbacks, so they rank 14th and 15th. But that doesn't mean that they're the same guy.
Sure. Yeah, I guess... They counteract each other a little bit. Like, Jimmy is probably a little bit too reckless and Kirk is probably a little too conservative. And I think that's what made and broke Jimmy. Is, man, you go watch week 18 against the Rams last year and it is spectacular. He brings them back and he has this fourth quarter drive at the end of the game. He was incredible. And you go watch their overtime against the Bengals. He was remarkable in that. But then you go watch a lot of examples last year. The Titans game. He's just missing open guys and he has Kyle Juszczyk wide open down the sideline and airmails him for what should have been a touchdown. And it's like, man, the urgency that he played with, it was like, slow down sometimes, man. Like, you don't have to uncork every throw like right away. Just but on the other hand, I'm guessing, like you said, the Vikings would rather Kirk Cousins be that way, whereas Niner fans sometimes are like, dang, Jim, like the linebacker was right there the whole time. The interception he threw in the divisional round against the Vikings a couple years ago, Kendricks just dropping into a spot and Jimmy throwing it into his chest. Like, the throw was never there. Don't let that rip, man.
Yep. And in that same game, I remember, and it may have been like a little bit tipped, the pass, But there was this absolutely absurd throw that he never should have made that turned out to be a huge big time throw on a third down, where I was like right above it in the press box. And it's a great view in that press box. Mm-hmm. Also elite food, by the way. And
very good food selection.
The best, the best I've had. Yeah. But no one cares about that. So, but like you could see the receiver coming across the field and you're like, there's a lot of Vikings there, and he just lets it loose and you're watching the ball going, is this going to get picked off or like pick six? And it just barely makes it in there for a huge first down. Even if it was like a little tipped or whatever, the guy makes a catch. It's like, sometimes you just got to do that. But I've described Jimmy and Kirk this way, and this is what makes them similar in my mind. You can tell me if you agree, is that if you go on the road to cover a game and you're in your hotel, and say it's hot out, so you want to turn on the AC. In a hotel, you can never get it the right temperature. Like whatever it says on the thing, it's like 74. Then you're like, I'm so hot. Like 73, I'm freezing. What is happening? Yeah. Like that's those two quarterbacks where you're like, Kirk, why don't you just throw it? Oh, no. Like, yeah. No, strip sack. Like, no. But then you're like, you know, so you end up with, and even statistically, they're sort of on weird ends of the spectrum too, where mm-hmm. Cousins has this crazy high completion percentage, but he doesn't take the risks. And then Jimmy has too many picks, but he takes the risks that succeed. And it's like, how do you ever get this quite right? And you could see where, and this is where San Francisco and Minnesota, oh, I just hit my mic. Sorry. They go to opposite directions. So if you're hearing this, I'm pointing one arm in one way and another in another. Okay. So they go in opposite directions. Is San Francisco said, we ain't paying for that. And the Vikings said, run it back. And that's the difference. And yeah. I think if it doesn't work this year, the Vikings should be very jealous of a team that said, we're not paying for that.
Yeah. And I think the Niners just kind of looked at, this is not a Kyle Madsen original thought, but I completely agree with it. The turning point for Shanahan and the 49ers was 2020 when they played the Bills. I think it might have been on Monday Night Football. Maybe Sunday night. Doesn't matter.
I remember the game.
They played the Bills, and it was in Arizona because of COVID, and Santa Clara County had shut down and no contact sports, so they had to play in Arizona. And Josh Allen turned that into a 7-on-7 passing league. And the Niners just had no answers. And even though Nick Bosa was hurt, the Niners still had a pretty good defense, and it just didn't matter because Josh Allen was too good. And Patrick Mahomes, of course, flipping the switch in the Super Bowl against what was arguably the best defense in the league that year, just kind of turned it on at the end. Like, hey, that quarterback's going to make two or three plays in this game that are going to hurt. So I think those were the kind of two turning points. And I think that's a great analogy, the hotel air conditioning, because Jimmy's going to give you, and I think Cousins the same way, because I have a host at the radio station I work at who knows that Cousins just kind of gets under Niner fan skin a little bit. And so he's just decided he's a huge Kirk Cousins guy. And so every time Cousins has a good game, he's like, that's a Super Bowl caliber quarterback. And it's like, yeah, but half the games he's not. And that's Garoppolo. Half the game, not even half the games. It's like half the quarters, because him, it's a quarter by quarter basis, man. It's like half the quarters he is awesome. And it's like, wow, this offense is unstoppable. And then half the quarters, it's like, they might want to put in Nick Mullins. Like, that, you know, that's kind of where it got. And you're right. In the modern NFL, you can't, I don't think you can continue paying for that and expect to win on a consistent basis. You know, the Niners had an excellent defense in 2019. And like I said, push come to shove, it didn't matter because their quarterback couldn't make a play. Last year, they had a very good defense playing at a high level, going into LA, fourth quarter lead, didn't matter. Matthew Stafford made plays. Garoppolo had two shots. The Rams tied it at 17. Garoppolo comes out. They go 3-and-out. And Rams go ahead, and Garoppolo comes in, and they throw a pick, and it's game over. You think he went 1-for-6 for -6 yards on the last two drives. And if you can't put the ball in your quarterback's hands at the end of a game, like, why are you paying him? That's the whole point.
It's sort of like both of them are better than Carson Wentz, but Carson Wentz on a rookie contract with a team that's built up around him. It always, like everything in the NFL with timelines and quarterback situations, always circles back to this point exactly. Mm-hmm. It's like the Browns and their Deshaun Watson thing is questionable on a lot of different levels, but it's not questionable on the idea that if you are choosing between which quarterback to pay, one in Deshaun Watson that has a chance to be elite year in and year out, assuming that he just goes back to being the normal Deshaun Watson, that's a quarterback you pay, versus Baker Mayfield, who is like right in the same party with Kirk Cousins and Jimmy Garoppolo, Spider-Man memeing each other like, oh yeah, yeah, we're all the same. It's like Baker Mayfield can win a lot of games on a rookie contract with a really stacked team. Mm-hmm. And then the thing with Cousins is that he hasn't just always been paid. He's always been elitely paid. Like this year, mm-hmm. he's got the third highest cap hit. Like at any any point since he signed the first franchise tag, he has been one of the most expensive quarterbacks in the league. They haven't even been able to do one of those mega extensions where you're like, that's weird. Tom Brady's making $12 this year, but $45 million in cash. How does that, like, how does he count for $1 million on the cap? Like, they've never really been a position to do that, in part because they've paid a lot of other people too. So now here's my question for you then. With Lance, one of the reasons that I love it, that they went for it, and a lot of people wanted them to go with Fields. I don't ever pretend to have any idea who's going to succeed for quarterbacks. You know, watch the college guys and watch QB school. I'm sure everybody watched that on YouTube, and watch JT O'Sullivan talk about
49ers legend.
I don't take my guesses. My guess is this: it's always good to draft a quarterback high because you never know. You never know that Josh Allen's going to be what he's going to be, or Patrick Mahomes versus Trubisky, who's drafted higher, or Lamar Jackson, or like got, you know, all sorts of guys who are drafted way later mm-hmm. than elite quarterback or bust quarterbacks at the top. And the later guys become elite. Who knows? But I love it from the perspective of getting a physical freak, trying to mold him like clay during his rookie quarterback contract, and then try to hit that moment in his second or third year where you just get your shot. Because most of the time, even with great teams, it's like one or two shots. Even mm-hmm. like, think about Wilson, like two shots at it. You probably get one or two shots a decade, even with great teams, unless you have Mahomes. So you got to take advantage of it. And I feel like they, this year, want to show that that's there. And then the next year, they kind of become like the Bills with Josh Allen. If he hits, I just like that strategy, even if it's a little risky.
Yeah, you got to do something at some point. I think they knew they hit a ceiling with Garoppolo, and they were in a really unique position because they had Garoppolo get hurt in 2020, and they went, what did they go that year? 6-10, 5-11. I forget exactly what they went, but they were picking 12. So they were a team a year removed from the Super Bowl with the assets to trade up to number 3 in the draft, with largely the same kind of core. It was still Bosa, Kittle, Warner, Samuel. And so they trade up to number 3 in the draft and had the advantage of not needing to start that quarterback right away. It wasn't a Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence situation where that quarterback had to play. So they could take a raw quarterback with a big skill set, knowing that he was going to marinate in 2021. Like, there was never, Jimmy Garoppolo is never going to not start last year. And then he gets a full season. He gets scout team reps. He gets two starts. He played a half against the Seahawks when Garoppolo got hurt. So he got 10 NFL quarters. And then he gets a full offseason. Like, you're going to work on these things. Here's the playbook. Know this. He worked out with Brandon Ayuk all offseason. And you're right. Like, they now have him on his rookie contract with a roster where, you know, we hear all the time about how the Rams roster is loaded, and it is. But the 49ers are paying George Kittle. These are all guys who are top three of their position. It's George Kittle. It's Trent Williams. It's Debo Samuel. Debo's not top three, but he's highly paid. It's Fred Warner. They are a very, very good team. And then they have some other really good pieces around. They paid Treverius Ward, the cornerback. And they're able to do this because they do have Lance on that rookie deal. And I think you hit the nail on the head. It's less about this year, even though Lance may struggle out of the gate a little bit, but I really think that if he improves the way he did between week 5 and 17 last year by getting more reps, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities that by week 11 or 12, it's kind of like they're like, oh shoot, like this is what they want it to be. Like he is figuring it out. And so they might go 8-9 or 7-10 this year, but they win their last three games and Lance looks awesome. And it's, you know, sky's the limit in 23. And that's if I'm betting, that's kind of how I think the season's going to go a little bit. But yeah, I mean, we've seen Shanahan make it work before with Robert Griffin III on a team that, you know, wasn't as good as the 49ers are. So I'm fascinated to see it, but I'm with you. They had to take a shot because running a back with Garoppolo was not going to bear the fruit, I think, that they needed it to.
Okay, I have two more things for you. One of them, what I've been asking all my guests, because it's been such a quiet offseason for the Vikings, is the Vikings hot take challenge. I'm going to ask you that in just a second. Just a second. But I'm going to give you a hot take. I think San Francisco can win 11. Because okay. I think that second year, even for a raw quarterback, especially a running quarterback, that we almost don't appreciate the addition of scrambling and what that does for winning. And like we saw it with Jalen Hurts, who threw the ball okay, but not well. And yet, and he's not as good of a scrambler as Trey Lance is, I don't think. At least ballpark. I mean, he's good. He's good. He's a good scrambler.
Sure.
But Lance can do more with his arm, for sure, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to go well for them. I mean, I look at this team watching them practice. I see a ton of talent, a team that was in the NFC Championship last year and adds a more dynamic quarterback. That's maybe 11 is not even a hot take. Why don't I even go 12? I'll go 12. I think San Francisco is going to have a great year. And part of the reason is because the NFC is just not that impressive. So you go, you know, I don't think Arizona will be that great. You know, I think that the Rams will have some slip in their game. So I think San Francisco has a good chance to be very good. That's my 49ers hot take. The challenge is simply, can you come up with a Vikings hot take? Like, what is the Vikings hot take? Since no one has passed so far. The most we got was maybe like a 6 out of 10.
God, I'm going to be totally honest. I don't, because of Kirk Cousins, I don't think about the Vikings that much. I think they kind of are what they are. Like, let's see I could give you a hot take, but I wouldn't be able to like support it.
You have to kind of believe, you know, it. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Like, I don't think I have one for you. I would have done some digging and tried to think of one, but off the top of my head, I know this is not good podcast material, but I don't really have one. And it's because of Kirk Cousins.
All have failed. Eric Edholm of NFL.com was on, and he was like, okay, I got one. I think the Vikings will be really good this year. And 30 seconds later, he's like, maybe 9-8. It's like, well, that's not really good then. Yeah, it's like, wait a minute. Because he went like, if this goes right, but then they probably don't have that. You still have Kirk and maybe this. And then it's like, they could go 9-8. Like, that's nope, you failed. Mike Renner said the edge rushers will be good if they're healthy. It's like, well, yeah, they should be.
Yeah. We had a guy call into our radio station last year, and he's like, it's just a random like sports talk radio caller. And he goes, I think they'll win between 7-10 games this year. Like, bold. Thanks.
Wow. Crushed it. Every team. Yeah.
Between 7-10 dubs. They'll either miss the playoffs or make it.
Now, yes. Now, next week. I used to have a similar job to yours in sports talk radio. There were some hot takes there. Those people would pass the hot take challenge, particularly when it has to do with backup quarterbacks. Then we do pretty well there.
60 is too high. 31.6% of 49er fans, almost a third, want Jimmy Garoppolo to stay as the backup quarterback.
That's what I mean. The talk radio caller, they do not fail the hot take challenge.
No, they don't.
Okay, so here, speaking of challenges, one more for you. So I was doing a little 49ers research, and the 49ers have two of my favorite players of all time, Jerry Rice and Terrell Owens.
Wow.
And since Terrell Owens left, in 2003. I want you to name as many players as you can in the top 10 in receiving since Terrell Owens left for the San Francisco 49ers. So 2003 was his final year in San Francisco. 2004 to present, the top 10 49ers in receptions.
In reception, single season or total?
Total receptions.
Okay. This is going to be fun. I love stuff like this. Okay. So 04 to 21, Anquan Boldin's got to be in there.
Anquan Boldin is fifth. Correct.
Okay. So Anquan's five. Let's see who is around. Is George Kittle on the list yet?
George Kittle is fourth, which shows you George Kittle is already fourth.
Okay. Did Michael Crabtree make it on?
Michael Crabtree is number two with 347 catches.
With 347. Okay, so I'm digging deep right now into those. Vernon Davis. Vernon Davis has got to be number one.
Far and away number one with 441 from 2006 to 2015, a long time 49er. Wow. So you've got three of the top four in reception.
Vernon Davis, Michael Crabtree, Anquan Boldin's in there. George Kittle, who's number three?
I'm gonna give you a hint. Not all of the 10 are wide receivers or tight ends.
Yeah, no, that's what I was wondering. Like Frank Gore was there for most of the time. Is Frank Gore on the list?
Frank Gore is number three.
Wow,
with 342.
Okay, this is going to be fun. Okay, now we're on.
Here's where
we got the top five.
It gets pretty hot.
Let's see. I know I'm missing like a super obvious one.
You are missing a current super obvious one. Yes.
Is Debo in the top 10 already?
Debo is in the top 10. He's seventh.
Oh my God. Debo's seventh.
This is why I love this. But somebody, wild. So you don't have number six and you have to go back a little ways, to maybe, I think you and I are similar age. So try maybe around your college years or something like that.
Around my college years.
I mean, this name came up and I went, you've got to be kidding me with this guy being in the
top. So we're like, were you an 08 high school grad?
I was 04. So we're like ballpark.
Okay. So college year. So this has got to be like early. So I'm like, man, it's a wide receiver, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Is it a wide receiver?
It is. Yep. This guy had 178 catches between 04 and 09.
Oh my God. 04 to 09. Who is a wide receiver who's with the team that long?
I'm not even sure Vikings fans will have heard of this guy.
No, is Brandon Lloyd on the list?
It is not Brandon Lloyd. No, it is not.
He's not in the top 10 though?
He's 15th.
Oh, boo.
I'm going to have to tell you this one. This is Arnez Battle.
Oh, dude. Brutal. Dang, yeah, Arnez Battle was the man for sure. Is Eric Johnson in there, a tight end?
Eric Johnson, also a great guitar player named Eric Johnson, is 13th.
Antonio Bryant?
Antonio Bryant is also not there, and I'm not even sure where he is on the list.
I think he was only with the team for 1 or 2 years.
So you have a guy who recently left.
A guy who recently left.
This is going to make you laugh too. This list is so wonderful. Brandon Ayuk is 12th, by the way. Like this shows you this shows you like where this list is at. I may just have to give it to you. But you have
Carlos Hyde.
No, that's a good guess though. He's 14th. You have Kendrick Bourne.
Then
Kyle Juszczyk. And I'll give you one shot at the other one. 08 to 2011 had his moment.
08 to 11. So he was on the team when they went to the NFC Championship and it wasn't Michael Crabtree. Is it Mario Manningham?
It's not.
Josh Morgan. Josh Morgan. Wow. Yeah. I didn't realize he was an 08 draft pick. Dang.
Some other great names.
I have a Josh Morgan take. You're welcome.
Good thing this is 44 minutes in.
Yeah. Josh Morgan take. He broke his leg in a 44-3 win, I think, over the Buccaneers in 2011. And it was Colin Kaepernick had come in to for mop-up duty. And Josh Gordon broke his leg. And that's the reason I think the 49ers didn't win the Super Bowl that year. Because they just didn't have another wide receiver to replace him.
Not Randy Moss.
Yeah.
Not like Randy a good Moss. Version of Randy Moss.
Dude, I'm not trying. No,
just some other names to take you down memory lane here. You have Delanie Walker. What a blocker. Delanie Walker.
Delanie's career. Delanie Walker, underrated, awesome career. He has like two halves. He was a very good blocker for the 49ers and then went on to have like a Pro Bowl caliber receiving career with the Titans. Shout out to Delanie. Right.
So he was 11th. You have a Marquise Goodwin mixed in here, the fastest man I have ever seen in my life, Marquise Goodwin. You have Garrett Celek, Isaac Bruce. That Isaac Bruce is in the top 20 on this list with another Bruce, a fullback, Bruce Miller.
Bruce Miller, yeah. Got arrested for beating the crap out of an old dude at Fisherman's Wharf. Yeah.
Not good. Not good.
Converted defensive end.
That's not how a fullback should handle himself.
No.
But what a list it is since
that's amazing. That was great. Arnaz Battles is an incredible pull.
He was really the reason I wanted to do it. So by the way, you should follow Kyle on Twitter at Kyle A. Madsen. Mark Madsen.
Not quite. Ryan Madsen.
Oh, the pitcher.
If you're looking for an athlete. Yeah. The only MLB player to ever have my last name. And he played for my favorite team, the Oakland A's.
Oh, I used to find, so there was a Lou Collier. So I would play video games with Lou Collier, even though he's a horrible utility backup infielder, just because the announcer would be like, up to the plate, Collier. And I'd be like, close enough.
That's actually what I thought your last name was until you reached out about this podcast. And I realized that that is not your last name.
It's a very common mistake. I don't know why it's not, to tell you the truth. I've never looked into it. So that's where we'll end. But this was terrific, Kyle. I really enjoyed this. Candlestick Chronicles is the podcast. If you are interested in 49ers takes about Arnaz Battle and so forth. And very happy to have you on the show, though. This was fun. I would say of all the preseason preview podcasts ever done, this is one of the best, if not the best.
Wow, that's big time. I appreciate that a lot.
I like to leave a guest with a compliment.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thanks, Kyle. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll catch you next time.